Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde. Ich möchte Sie begrüßen zu einer weiteren Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht aus Moskau, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt. Ich möchte in einem zweiten Teil mit unserem Gesprächspartner zum Thema Sanktionen auch noch etwas über den Krieg sprechen, weil es ist so wichtig, wenn man schon einmal die Gelegenheit hat, mit intelligenten Menschen in Moskau zu sprechen, dass einmal Sie auch Ihre Sicht auf diesen Krieg, auf die Geopolitik, auf die Außenpolitik, vielleicht auch auf die Missverständnisse bringen können, denn das Ziel unserer Sendung ist ja das, was wir machen. I'm just explaining what the goal of this transmission, of course, is to create a dialogue, to create a mutual understanding. This doesn't mean that you always agree what the other one is saying, but at least you have to take into account what the other one is actually about, what he's thinking. Also es geht ja auch darum, sich hineinzuversetzen. Was denken die anderen? Was machen es diese verflixten Russen, mit denen wir ja da fast täglich im Clinch liegen, zumindest unsere Politiker? This is why I'm very grateful that I can have your precious time, Professor Timofeyev. We are here at the RIAC, at the Russian International Affairs Council. You are also, I've already introduced you in my first part of this conversation, as a well-known sanctions specialist and professor for international relations at MGIMO, the Russian university here in Moscow. Yeah, let's talk a bit about this tricky issue of the Ukraine war, which creates so much heat, so much hatred, so much, you know, stress in the overall system. It's a terrible topic, but still we have to dive into it. Well, let me begin with the most obvious question, with the most stupid question probably. Who actually is to blame for the war in Ukraine?
Well, you know, there is always a temptation to blame someone. The problem is, the tragedy of international relations is that the militarized conflicts happen. They happen quite often. And there is no end to this. I mean, for centuries, political philosophers were trying to find a magic bullet against wars like Kantian peace, ideas of
in
peace,
Kaliningrad, this is his peace on eternal peace.
Yeah, but the war and the militarized dispute is something which is peculiar for IR. So whom to blame? I believe that all sides involved have their contribution. My take is that the current conflict is the result of those problems which had not been solved when the Soviet Union collapsed. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is the heritage of the last days of the Cold War. These are the shortcomings of the security system in Europe which we had after the Cold War. And actually now we have to pay these bills. We have to pay these bills.
What was the essential mistakes after the collapse of the Soviet Union? What was the core error, the core problem?
My reading is that the major problem was the security status of the post-Soviet states. Because it was clear even that time, even in 1990s, that the drift to the Western security system would be taken very negatively in Russia. In 1990s, Russia was quite weak to block this this drift, but in 2000s, in 2010s, it became stronger and stronger, and the very perception of this threat had been becoming more salient. And the fact that the system could not absorb this actually was one of the reasons of failure.
I mean, they're saying that, I mean, of course, you're talking about the whole NATO eastward enlargement. There have been outspoken critics of this, not only President Putin, but also in the West. But let's take the other argument. I mean, the NATO people say, well, Russia has paranoia. I mean, the NATO is a defensive alliance. We have no problem whatsoever with Russia. What are you afraid of? I mean, it's totally natural that countries like Poland or Hungary or the Baltic states, which have suffered under the rule of the communists, they probably are afraid of Russia. They want to join this NATO. What should we do? Should we close down? It's not a threat. Why do you see it as a threat? I mean, you know this argument.
Yeah, one important reason, fundamental reason, is that intentions may change overnight. While capabilities are changing slowly, right? So today you may say that we are not a threat, but tomorrow you may change your mind, right? So
the guns today are, circled to Iran, and then you just turn a bit the wheel, and then it's they're heading to Moscow.
By the way, that was one of the issues with this anti-missile infrastructure in Eastern Europe. Because formally speaking, it was directed against Iran and North Korea, but now it's clear that it can be used against Russia as well.
I mean, this is an important issue. Probably not everybody of our viewers understands the ABM. These are the anti-ballistic missiles, which is like a protective shield, but they can be used also to assault.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or to diminish the containment potential, the deterrence potential of Russia.
But how would you try to convince a NATO supporter saying Russia has paranoia? This is just out. Russia takes this NATO enlargement as a alibi to expand on an imperial mission.
Yeah. Well, one small example is a treaty on conventional arms in Europe. We used to have this mechanism to limit our capabilities on the Russian side and on the NATO side. In 1999, we agreed in Istanbul that on the new treaty, adopted treaty, right? But no single parliament in the West adopted this. Mm-hmm. It was adopted only by Russia and a number of post-Soviet states, right? So, and the reasons...
And what was the essence of this contract in Istanbul?
The essence was that the military capabilities on both sides have thresholds. So we cannot increase our capabilities higher than it is fixed in the document.
Yes.
But as far as it was not ratified by the parliaments on the NATO side, the Russian side also put it on hold. In reality, NATO has not violated these thresholds. But what Moscow wanted was to have legal obligations, right? And we didn't have them. So they were undermined. And actually, it affected trust in our relations. This is just one example.
Yeah.
Another example is that if we get back to Ukraine is a big country. Mm-hmm. Ukraine is a big military power, right? It inherited huge arsenals from the Soviet era.
Yeah.
And for Russia, it was fine to have Ukraine as neutral state, strong but neutral, right? And of course, any movement of Ukraine to some kind of Western area, right, of security had been perceived here and is being perceived here as a national security threat.
And I mean, I just bring up the arguments, in our newspapers from our politicians. They say, well, I mean, Ukraine is an independent country. There was this contract in 1994 where they gave up all their nuclear weapons. And Russia promised, of course, to accept
the
borders.
The
and now, all of a sudden, the Russian troops violate these borders. They march in for no reason. It's an unprovoked war. This is like a mantra in the West. I mean, it would be interesting to hear your reflected approach to these attitudes in the West, which are very strong. And I see it also. A lot of people believe in it. So how do you counter here?
Well, this is a popular view, but unfortunately it neglects many realities in the field, right? It neglects that in reality the drift of Ukraine to the, well, not to the West in general, that was not, by the way, the problem. The major problem was the security affairs.
The military West, in that sense.
Yes, the military and the very prospect of getting Ukraine closer to, mm-hmm. to the military security sphere. And also one of the important factors was the interference, the Western interference into the internal...
Maidan,
yes, because we can argue what was the role of the West. Was mm-hmm. it huge? Was it not? But the perception in Moscow was that Maidan was heavily supported by the West.
Definitely there were American politicians like
McCain
was there.
Yes,
Nuland
was there. Yeah, but not just politicians, but high-level officials. Mm-hmm. And the political support of Maidan was huge. Yeah. Even in 2004, it was quite extensive. Mm-hmm. I remember this. I was in Rome mm-hmm. On the conference organized by security mm-hmm. conference. And I remember when all the participants from the West, they took these orange scarves. They had these oranges in their hands. Mm-hmm. And even that time, the discussion already became quite biased, mm-hmm. and it was quite insulting for the Russian side. There was a perception on the Russian. In Moscow, that our opinion is simply neglected. Mm-hmm. So that our concerns are well exploited, and mm-hmm. they are simply dismissed.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen many wars, as you have mentioned before. I mean, the Americans have started
Iraq
a lot of wars, Iraq,
Yugoslavia.
For example. And it's interesting. I mean, there is never in a war a government who says, well, we violated the international law.
Yeah.
Every government says, of course, we are absolutely right. This is a legitimate war. For example, the Americans said, we are threatened by weapons of mass destruction mm-hmm. in Iraq. This
which
is
have
why
no
we,
existence.
Which they had not existed. They went in anyway. But I would say they truly, some of them truly believed that Iraq was a threat. I mean, you are an intellectual, you are a scholar. I mean, of course, it can be that even your government uses Ukraine as a, you know, as an alibi, as a, you know, as a smokescreen in order to pursue other goals. And what many commentators in the West say that it is, well, Russia has been an imperialist country all over the centuries. And Putin, President Putin, is this like neo-imperialistic kind of postmodern czar. Mm-hmm. And now he starts, you know, the rollback of the Cold War. He wants to go back and conquer all these countries. What do you say to
this?
Well,
I would say that these are the naive speculations, because what for? What for? In mm. case of Ukraine, there is and there was a concrete security issue, right? By the way, we all remember that there was a chance to have a ceasefire agreement in Istanbul in 22, but it failed.
Yeah.
And only then the Russian side recognized these four regions mm. As a constitutionally yeah. part of Russia, mm-hmm. but before that there had been
yeah.
a chance yeah. of settlement.
Was the threat for the Russians also that they feared that the United States, NATO, would put nuclear missiles into Ukraine, being a NATO member?
Yes, and it's not just about nukes. It's about the capabilities in general that such big military nation as Ukraine mm-hmm. would become a part of a bloc which is increasingly unfriendly to Russia, mm-hmm. right? And that was the major issue mm-hmm. that, even non-nuclear infrastructure yeah. may emerge in the country, and it will be a threat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now it is.
What is the... I've never understood why the Russians also sent a column of troops to Kiev. This had a huge impact in the West, because mm-hmm. this somehow justified the impression that Russia is really about a regime change. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was accompanied by this mm-hmm. Extreme rhetoric, it's Kiev is run by Nazis, mm-hmm. which of course in the West everybody thought, I mean, Putin now he turned crazy, he has a trauma mm-hmm. from COVID. I mean, come on, Zelensky, he's from a Jewish family. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is he talking about? This mm-hmm. guy is definitely not a Nazi. And now they're sending in, this sounds like the cheapest explanation to take over another country. Mm-hmm. So how do you assess this? I mean, why did they send these troops also against Kiev? Why this very strong rhetoric, which was never convincing in the West? I mean, even people who were not so negative about Russia thought mm-hmm. now they're totally overdoing it with that.
Well, you see, we will hardly know the essence of political decision on the operation in Kiev. Mm-hmm. I believe it is it must be classified, and the real arguments, right, stream of arguments will be a black box for us as scholars. But this narrative about neo-Nazism, which seems to be over-exaggerated in the West, is not for Russians. Because it's a fact that there are special militarized regiments, nationalistic regiments in Ukraine.
For example, the Azov regiment.
Like Azov. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we all know the ideology of this.
And we have to say that even the New York Times wrote an article a few months ago where they were saying that in the east, in the Donbas region, there were battalions fighting with Nazi symbols. And
of
outside
course.
Of the Azov regiment.
Yeah. And heroization of Nazi
Bandera,
suppliers like Bandera. Yes, of course. So the question of on the Russian side, what for? Mm-hmm. Why do you do this? Yeah. Why do you show these heroes? Why do you emphasize this? And of course, for the Russian for the identity of the Russians who went through through the war with Nazism, mm-hmm. who crushed Nazism, mm-hmm. it's essential. It's it's not a joke. It's it's when we see these swastikas and these crosses, the reaction is naturally very negative.
But this President Zelensky, who is, I would say, definitely not a Nazi. I mean, when he came to power, he actually promised to make peace with the Russians.
But
and they were saying that these right-wing or ultra-nationalistic or even Nazi, mm-hmm. neo-Nazi elements, they somehow stopped him. Yeah. Is he the prisoner of these right-wingers?
Well, probably yes. He cannot neglect them. But the fact that ultra-nationalist movement is a part of, used to be the part mm-hmm. of life, and now the essential part of life, seemingly in Ukraine, is a fact. We cannot just neglect this. This is not something which is imagined by Russians.
I had an interview with the movie director, film director Oliver Stone, who did this long film, mm-hmm. these interviews with your president, mm-hmm. Putin. Very interesting interviews, and I asked him, "Well, Oliver, do you think it was a mistake that Putin went into the Ukraine? That he went in with his troops?" And then he gave an interesting answer. He said, well, 1 year ago, I thought it was a mistake. But now I'm not so sure anymore. I think, horribly to say, that there was a gruesome, terrible inevitability because the West pushed too much. Mm-hmm. Pushed too much. They brought the Russians in an impossible solution with a civil war raging for 8 years. What is your assessment? Was it a mistake to use the military option? Was diplomacy really taken to the very end? Was the president probably a bit overconfident?
You see, what is clear is that there had been numerous attempts to use diplomacy. I would refer to only one case. In 2010, Russian President Medvedev coined the idea of a European Security Treaty. Mm-hmm. And one could like this idea, one could dislike, but the West have just neglected this. Mm-hmm. And for Russians, it was quite insulting. Mm-hmm. The point was, come on, guys.
So we are not taken seriously.
Yes. I remember that the reaction on the US side was just on the level of... something like deputy minister, like, or even less, right? And it was quite insulting for us. That was 2010, before the reunification with Crimea, before all of these complications. That was one of, this is one of the examples. 2001, the speech of Russian president in Bundestag. He was speaking in German, as far
he
as I
remember. He stretched out his hand.
Yes, and but if you look at the speech, it's very positive. But then, at the end, he stresses the security problems, right? And the point was just, guys, we want to be friendly. We consider the constructive the relations. We are the proponents of constructive relations with NATO. But please pay attention on our security concerns. And actually, they were more or less neglected, right? And this neglection, this ignorance, this neglection had been rising.
Was it ignorance or was it purpose? I mean, there is famous book you of course know by Zbigniew Brzezinski, the security guy from President Carter, who wrote the Great Chess Game, and how important it is strategically to separate Ukraine from Russia in order to push Russia down, you know, and to have a stronger position in Europe. Was it purpose or neglect?
Well, on the one hand, it was a ignorant self-confidence. I would put it
ignorant
like this. Self-confidence that Russians would never dare to to get out of the globalized economy, that the outlays will be too huge, that, well, we can just say...
We'll get away
relax.
With it.
Yeah, but you have to live with this. It turned out to be a wrong assessment, a wrong forecast. And, well, in terms of purposes, yes, there was a conviction that it's possible to not to change the political course. It's possible to neglect. And, well, this point of view turned to be mistaken.
I mean, the big tragedy for me is that Russia is, of course, a thoroughly European country. I mean, there are so strong ties. If you look at the relationship between Russia and Germany for 800 years, even more, they had the closest contacts. Of course, there have been wars between these two countries, terrible wars. Do you think that that Russia is pushed out of the Western sphere for good, or could that change? You know, we have a new government in the United States. We have some changes in Europe. Or is this now a new era of a Cold War for decades?
Yeah, the political crisis in our relations is a long term. You're right. You're absolutely right that we are very close to Europe and Russia, to a large extent, is a European country. So I would say that I would agree with those who say that Russia is quite a unique civilization. It's true. But the level of connections to Europe, the level of the importance of the overall European culture is huge. And Russia itself contributed to European culture enormously, right? So economically, we used to be very interdependent. Now we are not. This interdependence is weaponized. But you know, culture is very resistant. Culture, it's quite hard to change culture overnight. So cultural connections will be there with us for hundreds of years.
So this is actually the culture, even if it is, I mean, it's also weaponized now.
Even
of course, some Russian artists are sanctioned. Yeah. But you would say this is still an existing bridge which somehow links. Now, I'm always thinking about, you know, one has to see all the situation from different perspectives. And I'm also thinking about where are the Russian mistakes in all of this? I mean, it's always in politics, you cannot say it's only one side is guilty, right? There is always, it's a mutual, like in a marriage,
both.
My assessment is that probably the Russians overdid it with Germany. Germany was in the years 2000 was on a honeymoon situation with Russia. You had Chancellor Gerhard Schröder, who was a very good friend with your president.
Yes.
You had, of course, the reactivation of these very long ties, economic ties. Germany was on the rise, Russia was on the rise, and this mutual honeymoon was somehow a nightmare for the Americans because they thought, my goodness, I mean, if Germany gets stronger. They are the innovators. Russia has this huge reservoir of resources. Mm-hmm. They can become an extremely strong factor. Yeah. And what's in it for us? And I witnessed a lot of parties. I was working in Berlin at the time. There were big parties. The ambassador of Russia in Germany was a huge star. And I, at the time, I didn't think about it. But if I, in retrospect, I think, well, probably Russia was a bit too ambitious in its embrace of Germany. And the Americans probably felt a bit pushed out mm-hmm. of this new relationship. Mm-hmm. Or what would you what do you say?
Well, I would say that Germany and Europe in general lost an opportunity to become a more independent pole in international affairs.
Sure, but the Americans still have their bases there. How to convince the Americans yeah. to agree to this?
Yeah, but and Russia could be a critical factor of this high independence of Europe yeah. in world affairs. Now this chance is lost. Europe is more dependent on the US in terms of security and in terms of economy increasingly sure. as well. Right, so this chance is lost. And this is this is a problem for Europe. As for mistakes, for our mistakes,
yeah.
they should not be neglected. I would say that in relations with Ukraine, one of the mistakes was a stake on the relations with elite rather than the society.
Yeah.
So we used to work a lot with the government, with
powerful people.
With powerful people. Let's call well, they are called oligarchs in the press, but not the society. In a sense, it was natural because social connections were very extensive and people-to-people connections. We have many relatives, family relations with Ukraine. And the point was, why should we invest to the society? Because the society is already there. But it, mm-hmm. it turned out that it is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have more Ukrainians in our universities. We could have yeah. more Ukrainians in Russia in general, having jobs, having whatever, right? This integration, social exchange could be much greater. And it used, for instance, like Poles, when Poland invested to this, you know, mm-hmm. Societal yeah. contacts yeah. much mm-hmm. more, politicized them in a sense, just making them quite specific in mm-hmm. ideological sense. So this is so we lost the soft power moment.
This is something I think is a crucial mistake of Russia, not only in the field of Ukraine, but generally that the PR war.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
yes.
That,
I agree.
That
I
Russia
agree.
Neglected the whole aspect of
yes.
convincing
of information.
The West, because also our culture has this heritage of the Cold War.
Of
My
course.
Parents were totally against Russia. My grandfather was Swiss. They were totally mm-hmm. against the communists. Mm-hmm. And there are still people in Switzerland and Germany, they do not separate Russia and Soviet Union. It's mm-hmm. like the same thing. And therefore, yeah, you agree. I mean, Russia has somehow neglected a bit the PR also in the West.
Yeah.
For example, you take this absurd theory that President Putin decided the American election in 2016, which is, of course,
it's
as
ridiculous.
If the Americans would be so stupid to be manipulated yeah. By a foreign power. But somehow he didn't speak up against it. He never said, I mean, this is just total crap, it's crazy, what are you talking about? What is the reason behind that? Is it is Russia too timid on the public spheres arena, or what do you say?
Well, one of the reasons of this lack of efforts on information side was the identity crisis in Russia itself.
Yeah.
So the question, we lack the answers for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? What do we want? What is our goal? Mm-hmm. What are the purposes, the objectives? And this internal crisis of identity fueled this crisis of information presence mm-hmm. In the outside world. Mm-hmm. Because Americans know what they want.
Sure.
They want to spread democracy, they want to spread market, they have this...
They have the absolute superpower of soft power, because with Hollywood, absolute. With music, yes,
yes.
with all the culture,
McDonald's, etc. In our case, that was a problem because we were getting over a huge identity crisis. Now, this crisis is much less acute. And look, the one may like our information campaigns, one may dislike them, but mm-hmm. they are now much more consistent.
Much more consistent. Now my last question, we have already overstressed your time frame, but my very last question is, what do you wish for the future?
Well, I wish, first of all, the avoidance of big war, because we are gradually moving for this scenario. It is still possible to avoid it, but the probabilities are getting higher. Mm-hmm. So my wish is to avoid this, mm-hmm. because our fathers, our grandfathers witnessed this, but now the generation of contemporary politicians have never witnessed millions of victims. Mm-hmm. And this makes us quite, theoretical mm-hmm. In this regard. So we neglect the reality of this. Mm-hmm. But this may happen. Let's avoid this.
Are you afraid of a third world war?
I'm afraid of a world war, right? Third or fourth, regardless, right? Mm-hmm. But it's possible, and it's better not to start.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Professor Timofeyev. Very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.